Chapter 8. Working with Emotions. In 2007, a man called Lewis Pugh jumped into the Arctic Sea. The ice was not completely frozen, and Pugh's plan was to be the first person to survive a long-distance swim across the North Pole. Pugh had been in the British Special Air Service before becoming the best cold-water swimmer on the planet. 2 years earlier, he had jumped off of the ice to swim a kilometre in Antarctica. But he doesn't do it just to be the best in the world. He wants to make people think about climate change. Before he swims, something happens to Pugh that has never been noticed in any other human. His body temperature goes up from 98.6 degrees Fahrenheit to 101 degrees Fahrenheit. When it is time to get into the freezing water, his body prepares. The passengers on the Titanic died in water that was 41 degrees Fahrenheit. In Pugh's Antarctic swim, the water had been 32 degrees Fahrenheit. At the North Pole, it was less than 29 degrees Fahrenheit. After falling into that water, a British explorer had lost fingers in 3 minutes. Pugh's team estimated that his swim would take 20 minutes. But a 5-minute test swim at the North Pole went badly, and instead of imagining success, Pugh began to imagine failure. If he failed, he would die. He became very afraid and questioned whether he would survive. So, would it have been better for him to imagine success? This chapter looks at the emotional cost of going against the crowd. In my own research in a healthcare company, I tested how much employees knew about how to manage emotions. Those who showed up well in the emotion test also spoke up more with ideas and suggestions in the workplace, and their managers thought they were better employees. They had the courage to challenge, but they were also able to control their emotions when they were doing it. To understand these emotional skills, I'll look at how Pugh got ready for the freezing water, and how Martin Luther King Jr. prepared civil rights workers to keep calm. I'll explore how one group managed to throw out a dictator, and how a leader in technology persuaded engineers to make a major change to their product. By studying how to manage emotions, you'll discover whether it's better to plan for success or failure, whether calming yourself down can fight fear, how to deal with your anger, and what it takes to keep going when everything seems to be against you. Optimism and pessimism. Although many originals seem to be confident on the outside, inside they often worry and doubt their own abilities. When United States government leaders described their most difficult decisions, they didn't talk about difficult problems, but about choices that needed courage. And research by Scott Sonnenschein has shown that people working for a better environment are often uncertain about whether they can succeed. Challenging the present situation is often hard work, and there will be problems and failures along the way. Psychologist Julie Norum studies two different ways of managing these challenges: optimism and pessimism. Optimists expect that the best will happen. They stay calm and expect to succeed. Pessimists expect the worst. They worry, and they imagine all the things that can go wrong. Most people think it's better to be an optimist than a pessimist. Yet Norum found that although pessimists worry more and are less confident, they do their jobs as well as the optimists. and Norum soon realized that pessimists did well because of their pessimism. Norum explains that pessimism works as a way of managing fear and worry. When pessimists start to doubt themselves, they don't allow themselves to freeze with fear. They imagine an enormous failure to make them worry more, and that gives them reasons to succeed. Once they have imagined everything that can go wrong, they look at how to avoid those problems, and this makes them feel they can control things. They worry most before they act, so when they start to move, they are ready to succeed. They are confident because they know they have prepared as well as possible. If they don't worry, then they relax and don't plan. It's important that pessimists don't feel comfortable. Lewis Pugh was usually an optimist. He took risks when other people would give up. But in the weeks before a major swim, he was often more of a pessimist. It was not the words of his own team that encouraged him, but the words of people who doubted him. 2 years earlier, before another freezing swim, an expert had told him that it was impossible and that he would die. As Pugh stood shaking at the North Pole, his pessimism told him that things were not going to go well. But instead of trying to find reasons to be happier, he started to think about every possible risk. He made plans to be sure that he spent very little time on the ice before the swim and to get to the boat as quickly as possible afterward. The trick is to make fear your friend, he says on his website, www.lewispugh.com. But this isn't enough. Pessimism can be helpful when you're sure about what you want to do, but when you're not so sure, doubt can get in the way. Keep believing. When most people list the things that frighten them, one thing comes up very often: speaking in public. If we want to understand how people manage fear, we can just put them on stage. Alison Wood Brooks asked college students to give a speech about why they would be good to work with. The speeches were filmed, and a group of students was ready to watch them and score them. With only 2 minutes to prepare, many of the students were actually shaking. If you were in this situation, how would you manage your fear? When 300 professional workers were asked, 90% suggested, try to relax and calm down. But this is not the best advice. Before the college students gave their speeches, Brooks asked them to say 3 words out loud. Half of them were asked to say, I am calm. The other half were asked to say, I am excited. Changing one word was enough to change the quality of the speeches. When students attached the label excited to their emotions, they were scored as 17% better at persuading and 15% more confident than those students who said they were calm. The excited students also gave longer speeches than the calm students. In another experiment, when students were nervous before a math test, they scored 22% better if they were told, try to get excited, instead of try to remain calm. Brooks wanted to find out if it's better just to accept worry, so she gave students another frightening task. They were asked to sing in public, and they would be scored on the quality of their singing. This time, one group wasn't asked to say anything before singing, another was asked to say, I am worried, and a third, I am excited. The group who said nothing scored 69%. The group who said worried scored only 53%. But the group who said excited scored 80%. When we are frightened, why is it better to make ourselves excited than to try to stay calm? Fear is a strong emotion. When we are frightened, our heart gets faster. If we then try to relax, it's like trying to stop a car suddenly when it's going fast. It's better to take a strong emotion and turn it into something different but equally strong. Author Susan Cain says that we have a stop system and a go system. When we haven't decided what we are going to do, pessimism is dangerous. Thinking too much about the dangers makes us worry and stop. Being optimistic makes us more likely to do something, to go. However, in a situation where we have already decided what we are going to do and start to worry about it, it is better to be a pessimist and turn our worries into positive emotions like excitement. This switches on our go system. In previous cold water swims, Lewis Pugh was certain he would succeed, so being a pessimist was helpful. Looking at all the possible dangers made him ready for anything. At the North Pole, this worked at first, but after the 5-minute test swim, which went badly, he started to worry. What I felt on that stupid test swim wasn't like anything I'd felt before. I don't believe I can do this. It was time to move away from pessimism. A friend gave him 3 ideas to get excited. First, he reminded Pugh that 29 people from 10 countries had helped him, and he put flags from those countries along the water. Second, the friend told him to think of his parents and how they had helped him. And third, he told him to think about climate change and how the swim might help. After listening to his friend, Pugh was ready to do the swim. He jumped into the freezing water and finished, successfully, in 18 minutes and 50 seconds. For Pugh, the most difficult thing was managing his own emotions. But other originals have to manage other people's emotions. When others are afraid to act, how can we encourage them? In 2009, 15 young tourists visited Belgrade, the capital of Serbia. After walking them around part of the city, their guide, a Serbian in his 30s, talked about the country's recent history of high potato prices and free concerts. But they weren't ordinary tourists, and they were getting impatient. They had come to Belgrade to learn how to get rid of their own country's dictator. They asked the guide how the people of Serbia had removed the Serbian dictator, Slobodan Milosevic. "You don't need to take big risks," the guide told them. "You can do lots of little things. Drive more slowly than usual. Push televisions through the streets, or turn lights on and off." The tourists just laughed. "Small things like that would never work for us," they said. "If we did that, we would be arrested and then disappear. How can we have a revolution when we can't meet in groups of more than 3? They didn't know it, but the guide had heard all this before. From Georgians in 2003, from Ukrainians in 2004, from Lebanese in 2005, and from Moldavians in 2008. In each case, they had gone back to their countries and removed a dictator. The guide, Sergio Popovic, had taught them all. He was one of the people behind Otpor, the non-violent organisation of young people who had helped remove Milosevic. Popovic had been attacked by the dictator's police and had spent time in jail. When psychologist Dan McAdams and his team asked adults to tell them their life stories and how they felt at different times, they saw two patterns. Some people had mostly good experiences and were fairly happy during most of their lives. But people who had found original ways of helping others often had stories that started badly when they were young but got better later. Although they had more bad experiences than the other group, these originals had more happiness. They managed their problems and, in the end, their lives were happier and fuller. After leading the group that removed their dictator, Popovich began to help other groups that were trying to remove dictators without violence. Not every group succeeded, but we can learn a lot from Popovich's way of managing emotions. Using users to excite teams. When Josh Silverman took over at Skype in February 2008, the company had problems. Skype, a leader in free computer-to-computer calls, was no longer growing as fast as before. Silverman decided he had to do something big. In April, he announced that Skype 4.0 would appear before the end of the year, and it would include full-screen video. Most employees were deeply negative about this. They thought there wasn't enough time, the video quality would be poor, and users would hate using a full screen. Silverman didn't try to calm them down, but decided he needed to get them excited about video. He talked to employees about the big idea. It's not about making cheap phone calls. It's about being together when you're not in the same room. Silverman talked about how Skype allowed his children to keep close contact with their grandparents, who were thousands of miles away. Then he let other Skype users talk about what Skype had done for them. A married couple talked about how Skype kept them together when they had to spend a year living apart. A man in the army talked about how he could be with his children even when he was in another country. They even opened Christmas presents together. As they began to understand that Skype was about connecting people, the team's worries turned to excitement. Their Go system was switched on. Skype 4.0 was ready, on time, with high-quality full-screen video calls. Soon, Skype was adding 380,000 new users every day. Less than 3 years later, Microsoft bought Skype for $8.5 billion. The company had increased in value by 300%. In Serbia, Popovich knew he had to show people something to encourage them to act. People were too afraid to listen, so Popovich used a picture of a fist to encourage people's Go system. Strength in numbers. If you are the only person with an idea, it can be hard to defend it. But people can get strength from just a small number of people who think like them. To feel that you're not alone, you don't need a whole crowd. Research by Sigal Barsadeh and Hakan Ostjelic has shown that in business or government, even having one friend may be enough. If you want people to take risks, you have to show them they aren't alone. This was the first part of Otpor's success. In 1998, they painted a fist on buildings all around Belgrade, together with sentences like, "I am against the government because I love Serbia," "Bite the system," and "Argue until we win." Before they saw the fist, people who were against Milosevic were afraid to say what they thought. But when they saw it, they realized there were others who were happy to take a risk. Later, when police arrested members of Otpor, those members were often asked who was their leader. Popovich and his friends taught them to answer, "I am one of the 20,000 leaders of Otpor." Around the world, different organizations have used small actions to show they are part of a larger group. In Chile, to complain about the dictator Pinochet, people turned their lights on and off. When people saw their neighbours doing that, they weren't afraid to do the same. Then people were invited to drive slowly. Taxi drivers slowed down, and so did bus drivers. Soon, people were walking slowly in the streets. People understood there was no risk. It's not against the law to drive or walk slowly. In Poland, when people were unhappy about government news on televisions, they knew that just turning off the television wasn't enough. So they took their televisions outside and pushed them through the streets. It's not against the law to push your television through the streets. In Serbia, Otpor found a clever way to change people's fear to excitement. Comedy. They sent birthday presents to Milosevic, a ticket out of the country, and a prison uniform. It's hard to be afraid of speaking up against a dictator when you are laughing at him. Laughter can work in other situations where people are afraid too. When you have no power, laughter is a powerful way to change strong negative emotions into positive ones. After hearing Popovich's story, a group of students wanted to do something about the very high cost of lessons at their university. They decided to show the university president pictures of their cheap and simple meals and invite themselves to dinner at his house. But Popovich also has a message that isn't funny at all. At first, Popovich seems to be an optimist. When others were ready to give up, he thought there was a better future for Serbia. But when I asked him if he was ever unsure, he told me he had doubts for all of those 10 years. Even today, he worries about the people who died, and he feels responsible. The importance of now. On New Year's Eve in 2000, Popovich and his friends organised a celebration in the main square in Belgrade, with music and dancing. At midnight, the famous band, the Red Hot Chili Peppers, would appear, and everyone was very excited. 1 minute before midnight, the square went dark, and people began counting down. But when it was midnight, no famous band appeared. Instead, a voice said, "We have nothing to celebrate. This has been a year of war. But it doesn't have to be that way. Let's make the coming year count. Because 2000 is the year." When John Cotter studied 100 companies that were trying to make major changes, he discovered that the first mistake they made was to fail to make people understand that acting quickly was important. Cotter noted that managers didn't realise how difficult it was to persuade people that change needed to happen, and it needed to happen now. If they don't understand the importance of speed, employees sit back and refuse to change. Otpor made people in Serbia understand the importance of speed when they announced, "This is the year." To understand this more, let's look at another piece of research by Amos Tversky and Daniel Kahneman. Imagine you are the manager of a car company. Sales are down, and you need to close 3 factories and lose 6,000 employees. You can choose between 2 different plans. Plan A will save one of the three factories and 2,000 jobs. Plan B has a one-third chance of saving all three factories and 6,000 jobs, but a two-thirds chance of saving no factories and no jobs. Most people, 80%, prefer Plan A. But let's now look at the choice in a different way. Plan A will lose two factories and 4,000 jobs. Plan B has a two-thirds chance of losing all three factories and 6,000 jobs, but a one-third chance of losing no factories or jobs. These are the same choices as the first time, but they don't feel like it. In this case, 82% of people prefer Plan B. In the first case, the choices show what we could gain. We prefer Plan A because it looks less risky. When we are sure we will gain something, we want to keep and protect it. We want to save 2,000 jobs rather than take a risk and save no jobs. In the second case, we are told what we are going to lose. Now we want to avoid losing anything, even if it means taking a bigger risk. We're going to lose thousands of jobs anyway, so we decide to take a big risk and hope that we lose nothing. If we want people to change, is it better to show them why it is helpful to change or the costs of not changing? According to Peter Salovey, it depends on whether people think the change is safe or risky. If they think it is safe, it is better to talk about the good things that will happen if they do it. They will want to act immediately and get there quickly. But if they think it's risky, that doesn't work. They are comfortable where they are, so they don't see why they should change. If we want them to change, we have to talk about the bad things that will happen if they don't change. It's easier for people to take a risk when they know they will definitely lose something if they don't. At Merck, the medicine company, they wanted managers to be more involved in making changes. Managers were asked to think of ideas that would put Merck out of business. They imagined that they were one of Merck's competitors and developed ideas for new medicines that were better than Merck's or looked at markets Merck had missed. Then they had to find ways to defend the company against these competitors. This kill the company exercise is strong because it asks people to think about what they might lose. Before, when managers thought about new products, they didn't want to take risks. But when they thought about their competitors, they realized it was a risk not to innovate. Popovic realized that strong emotions were needed to change the situation in Serbia. By stopping the concert and sending people home on New Year's Eve, he was reminding them to act now. Deep and surface acting. Anger is a good way to get people to do something. We feel we have to fight when someone has done the wrong thing. But although anger can encourage people to speak and to act, it can also make them do it the wrong way. Deborah Myerson and Maureen Scully suggest that the key is to be hot-headed and cool-headed at the same time. The heat pushes us toward action and change. The coolness gives the action a useful shape. Arlie Hochschild has suggested that if you are feeling a strong emotion like worry or anger, there are two ways to manage it: surface acting and deep acting. Surface acting means changing your face, speech, and actions to show you are calm. If you are working for an airline and an angry passenger starts to shout at you on a plane, you may smile and try to show some warmth. You change on the outside, but inside you haven't changed. You are angry with the passenger, and the passenger probably knows it. But if you are deep acting, you might imagine that the passenger is under stress, is afraid of flying, or has problems at home. You feel sorry for the passenger, and your smile is warmer. Before Lewis Pugh starts out on one of his swims, he uses deep acting. He listens to music and remembers jumping from a plane in his army days. He is returning to the excitement that he felt then and which he wants to find again. Deep acting is a better way of managing emotions than surface acting. If we want to show our emotions, we have to feel them. The dangers of venting. Less than a year after Rosa Parks refused to give up her seat on a bus in Montgomery, a United States court decided that separating black and white people was against the law. Now that black people could sit anywhere on a bus, Martin Luther King Jr. and others realized they needed to help black people reply to the violence that they might meet. The team put chairs in rows, like a bus, and asked audience members to play black or white passengers. The white passengers called the black passengers names, pushed them, and threw things at them. The black passengers needed to act deeply. King wanted them to be angry enough to speak out, but not to be so angry that they became violent. What would be the best way to manage their anger? Many people suggest that venting works best, turning the anger against something else, like hitting a pillow or screaming. But studies have shown that venting doesn't help, even if you think it does or it makes you feel good. After venting, most people are even angrier than before. When King and his team worked on anger, they were careful to stop people venting. Sometimes a person playing a black man would get so angry that he hit back. They would work with him so that what he said and did was less violent. To use anger in a positive way, it is better to avoid thinking too much about the person we are angry with. It is better to think about the people who have been hurt by the person's actions. Martin Luther King Jr. often did this. He said he was not trying to beat the white man. He wanted to free black children. Thinking about those who have been hurt can lead to a different kind of anger. Research has shown that when we are angry with someone, we want to hurt them. But when we are angry for someone, we want to make things better for them. We don't want to punish. We want to help. When a voice told Serbians there was nothing to celebrate on New Year's Eve, they felt an angry energy. Popovich said, "There was an energy in the air that no rock band could ever recreate. Everybody felt that they had something important to do." The next fall, Milosevic lost the election, and the man who told the people to go home became the president of Serbia 4 years later. E.B. White once wrote that he woke in the morning unable to decide whether he wanted to improve the world or to enjoy the world. He commented in an interview with the New York Times, "This makes it difficult to plan the day." As we search for happiness, many of us choose to enjoy the world as it is. Originals take a more difficult path, trying to make the world what it could be. They may have to forget about their own happiness for a time. Becoming original is not the easiest way to find happiness, but the journey brings its own happiness.